So now we're just going to, oh yes. Well, okay, I'll just share this thing that we agree with the growing number of scientists, geneticists, farmers, and ethical leaders calling for a moratorium on the release of any more GMOs into our environment. GMO food must be labeled to allow consumers to choose whether or not to accept the risks of eating it. We want a total ban on all new GM crops and foods. And why have we allowed ourselves to become guinea pigs for the biotech companies? You know, we are the people. We have to stand up and take a stand. And I really applaud Greenpeace for its work in this area. And we'll go to the next program. You're clicking that. That's it. Now, full screen. Fantastic. Okay. This is very brief. It's only about 10 slides. I knew that we'd have a science perspective on this, and we'd have an activist perspective on this, but I just want to ask a few questions. That where is the economic sense of bioengineering of our food supply? The promise is that GE crops will improve both farm economies and export trade. But what is the reality? GE crops have caused a decline in export sales and worsened farm economies. The U.S. soy sales to the U.K., 1996 to 1999. Sorry, I don't have more recent information. In 1996, the sales were $207 million. In 1999, it dropped to $56 million. Where's the economics? Are we stupid? The total world market share in U.S. soybeans has gone from 57% to 40%. And I can't read it on mine. This is the source of that is the U.S. Department of Agriculture as reported in Non-GMO Source newsletter, January 2003. So you really should get online and check out the Non-GMO Source. It's excellent data in there. The other promise is that GE crops have higher crop yields, but in reality, they have lower crop yields. Roundup Ready soy yields average 5.3% less bushels per acre. The best conventional soybean varieties produce 10% or more per acre than GE soy. 10% more per acre. That's according to Dr. Charles Benbrook, the evidence of the magnitude and consequences of the Roundup Ready soybean yield drag from university-based varietal trials in 1998. Now, this is a range of premiums for non-GE soy per bushel. Those who are growing food-grade soybeans get $1 a bushel more than GE soy. For seed soybeans, they get 60 cents a bushel more. And for crusher soybeans, 18 cents a bushel more. And the source of that is David Wright, Agri-Grain Marketing, as reported in Non-GMO Source newsletter, December 2001. Seed costs are higher for GE soy per acre in 2000. It was $25 an acre more for GE soy. Now I have to back up. The seed costs were $25.56 per acre for GE soybean seeds. But for non-GE soybean seeds, it was $21.21. Source, Dr. Michael Duffy, Who Benefits from Biotechnology, Iowa State University, December 2001. The global market for glyphosate, trade name Roundup, tripled between 1995 and 2001. Between 1995 and 2001, even though the herbicide has been on the market for more than 25 years. This is significant to see that it has tripled in a six-year period. and the previous 19 years it had a fairly modest growth. That's the source. The source of that's Monsanto 2001 annual report. There's no decline in the amount of herbicides used by soy farmers. Remember the promise that biotech told us that biotechnology will reduce the amount of herbicides, pesticides? Well, actually, that's not true. Slightly more pounds of herbicides are applied to the average acre of Roundup-ready soybeans compared to the average acre planted to conventional soybean varieties. Source, Dr. Charles Benbrook. GE industries respond to the market. Monsanto, I'd say thanks again to Greenpeace and its allies. Monsanto pulls GE potatoes from market after McDonald's and Burger King said they would not use GE potatoes in their fries. GE sugar beets delayed indefinitely after Hershey's announced it would not use GE sugar in their products. So GE technology costs more to put into the ground. It produces less crop. It earns less when sold and restricts export markets. So again, I'm going to quote from Mahatma Gandhi. The things that will destroy us are politics without principle, pleasure without conscience, wealth without work, knowledge without character, business without morality, science without humanity, and worship without sacrifice. Oh, I was going to end there, but I'm going to say one more thing. In Canada, this is probably going to come to the U.S. In the U.S., we state on our packaging, not genetically engineered. That's the term. We used to say non-GMO, but now we say not genetically engineered after our lawyers advised us to change that statement. So we talk about the benefits of organic farming and agriculture and what's wrong with conventional agriculture and what's good about certified organic goodness. It's good food, no synthetic pesticides, no synthetic herbicides, no preservatives or additives, no GMO ingredients, and no irradiation, and also no sludge. It's better ecology, enriched drought-resistant soil, less soil erosion, less groundwater pollution, improved farm biodiversity. Now, in our Canadian packaging, we have had to bow after a long fight of 3 years with the major supermarket chain up there and their allies called the Grocery Council of Canada, I think it's called, the Canadian Grocery Council. I'm not sure if I got the words right, but they became so upset with us because of our very visible stand that we took against GMOs in the media, television, radio, print, and on our packaging, that they gave us an ultimatum, the supermarket industry in Canada, that any reference to genetic engineering, GMOs, or biotechnology had to be removed from our package or we'd be kicked out of their stores. And we fought, and then it came to an ultimatum where we would lose $7 million a year in business to one of our key customers up there if we didn't comply with it. And then I thought of the economic consequences of it would mean layoffs in our plants and in our company. It would mean less outlets for organic farmers because we actually deal with hundreds of organic farmers. We use about 50 million pounds of certified organic grain a year in our breakfast cereals. So we didn't want to impact our farmers and our people and our communities at all. So we bowed to that, and we had to take it off the Canadian packaging. But beware, the same thing is probably going to come here in the U.S. Okay, so and it. But funnily enough, in Canada, it came from industry. It came from the conventional industry, And I think if they tried to do that here in the U.S., there probably would be massive class action lawsuits. You know, so I guess in Canada we try to be kinder and, you know, gentler. But anyway, I just want to, again, thank you for this opportunity to address you and to add, hopefully add something to this panel discussion today. So thank you very much for your patient listening.
So we have about a half hour for questions. So if you want to line up, I think it'd be easier to just line up at the microphone, if you don't mind, and begin the questioning. If you have a specific question for a specific person, go ahead and address it.
I have two things, actually. One is, what are the lessons that were learned from the recent loss of this Oregon State Initiative for Labeling GMOs? And the second one is, the biotech industry really is, the foundation is patent infringement laws, and what's going on in terms of, you know, the challenges there.
So, sorry, the first question was about what's the fallout from losing the Oregon
What are the
Oregon
lessons
initiative?
Learned from Oregon State Initiative not
right.
passing?
So for people who don't know, there was a ballot measure in Oregon that would have required labeling of genetically engineered food sold and processed in Oregon. And I think the amazing story about Oregon is that it was really three people who, with a few volunteers and $50,000, gathered enough signatures to get the Oregon initiative on the ballot. Which, if you've ever worked on a petition drive of any kind, they had to collect, I think it was around 60,000 valid signatures. It was quite a big job. 68,000. They got over 100, right. But there wasn't really much money or a lot of resources for the campaign to then talk to people about what the Oregon Initiative was all about. And consequently, when the industry came together and spent $6 million on TV ads, which someone from Oregon was saying last night they were running every 5 minutes on TV, coming up to the election, and the message was about farmers going out of business and your supermarket shelves would be empty. The poll numbers went from, 60 to 70% in favor to 30% in favor. It was a pretty dramatic drop. So I think the lesson learned on that is to have more of a grassroots base and more money lined up before we do that again. But I don't think it means we can't look at future initiatives.
I have also two questions. One is, an ingredient that I see a lot in a lot of products, especially in the past few years, is xanthan gum. And it's my understanding that xanthan gum is a fermented product made from corn sugars. Do you know anything about that?
It probably uses corn as a source for its xanthan gum is from a Xanthomonas bacteria, which has to be grown on a substrate, which is often corn. So they can use a different corn source to make non-GMO xanthan.
Okay. Do you know if it's testable? Like, if you can test xanthan gum, if it has any of the proteins in it? To test that, that it is GMO-free?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that you could certainly find out the source of the material that the bacteria is grown on. And this is a really good example of why the Organic Materials Review Institute put together a decision tree, because you have to really go back to, especially with these bacterial fermentation type products, you have to go back to the source of the material that they're grown on. So if that's GMO, is the xanthan gum that's extruded from this bacteria and extracted actually considered GMO?
Right. And my other question is there any legal action that either Nature's Path or the other natural foods companies are taking against the biotech industry for contaminating, contamination? And increasing costs, related to testing for GMOs and stuff.
There are hundreds, maybe more than 1,000 lawsuits that are going on right now against Monsanto and
and their ilk. But nothing that we've undertaken. There are different, I mean, they're suing farmers, you know, for trespass against their technology, and no, but we've definitely have symbolically threatened and sent them copies of our GMO testing bills. But, you know, we don't expect them to ever pay it. Even though they've trespassed against us, we haven't trespassed against them.
I wanted to follow up on the last point made about the power of the retail industry. I know we need to fight the introduction of any GMO products, but let's not underrate the power that the retail industry has of dictating back down. Concentration, food system in the United States has escalated at an unprecedented rate, and many of the companies here are very global, such as Walmart and what they own and what they'll dictate for policy, especially in food.
That's a good point.
I'm kind of out of the loop on GMOs because I've dealt only with organic for several years, and now I've required by my company to help source non-GMO produce. And I've heard these huge commodities like corn and soy, grain, I heard mentioned late in the conversation, potatoes, and then sugar. How prevalent are GMOs in lettuce and carrots and the many other varieties of produce out there right now? Because we need to make salads for a company, one of them that you mentioned up there, and they require us non-GMO free. And I go to our conventional buyers at my company, and none of them even know what I'm talking about. So how do I find out on these various and sundry produce commodities what may have contamination, and how do I get disclaimers from those who don't?
Well, the good news is that the majority of fresh fruits and vegetables are not genetically engineered right now. But there's some papaya, some squash. There were tomatoes, but I've heard for the most part they're not really on the market. Monsanto pulled its genetically engineered potato from the market, as you saw from the slide, after McDonald's and Burger King said they got consumer pressure to not use genetically engineered potatoes in their French fries. So for the most part, if you're just mainly dealing with produce, you're probably okay. And you can get a list from the USDA of all of the fruits and vegetables that they've approved. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're growing, though. But you can at least find out what's legal as far as genetically engineered fruits and vegetables.
See, I'm in a large wholesale distributorship who buys, let's say, from 10 different lettuce growers.
Right. There's no genetically engineered lettuce.
Regardless of which.
You're fine on lettuce. There's no genetically engineered lettuce.
And so from the USDA, then, I can find out by brand or by commodity?
By commodity.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a website. I mean, it's basically USDA.gov.
Sure.
That you can drill down and get the list of things that are have been approved to be grown.
Right.
Commercially.
Mary, it's if I were making salads for you, it's Trader Joe's, okay?
Right.
You mentioned up here.
Right.
And they have paperwork I have to fill
right.
out.
Right, exactly.
We have to put our name on the bottom that we assure, they actually guarantee there's no GMOs.
Right. Right.
Well,
same as your paperwork, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, the issue on crops that can't be genetic, that brings up another issue in terms of claims. You'll often see a non-GMO claim on products that would never have been genetically modified. The FDA doesn't like that either, because that tends to confuse the consumer. The average consumer doesn't understand there's only a finite number of crops that have even been genetically modified and approved for use. But it's not really appropriate to say non-GMO if it's a wheat product because nothing's been commercialized yet. But it is important to know that there's a limited number of crops. Typically, they're the soy, corn, canola variety, but there are some other, smaller kind of crops that, and they're trying to get genetically modified rice and wheat and lettuce and
what about the
strawberry.
Notorious fishberry?
Yeah, yeah exactly.
The notorious fishberry is not on the market, which is a good thing. It was a strawberry that was crossed with genes from a flounderfish to make it resistant to cold temperatures. They field tried it out. But it didn't actually make it to market. thankfully. Right.
And well, I'll try to convert them to all organic.
But there is a potential for GE salmon to be approved in the near future, so that's something to be aware of as well.
I'm a little confused. I have to confess a lot of ignorance on this subject, but given the apparent poor economics, poor yields, et cetera, of genetically engineered plants and products, why are they doing so well in the marketplace, or why is the penetration rate so high? I mean, what's driving this? Well, that is my point, though, but you argued earlier that...
I'll go for that one, because I farmed in Nebraska when the technology was introduced. It is incredible advance in factory farming. It makes it so that you can, you know, two brothers could slam in 5,000 acres of corn and beans. You can come out and custom combine it, or you can custom spray it, combine it, and you're done. You can have another off-farm job, which is what people are doing now. So in the communities that I was in, you know, the people that were aggressive would go out and cash rent these, cash rent land. The other farmers couldn't compete, and so it's been an incredible concentration. You know, the scale has just dramatically increased in the last 5-10 years, and this it makes it easier. We love ease, we love convenience, and it is so simple. You just slam in a crop, you spray it, and you harvest it.
So they've also done an incredibly good marketing job.
Yeah.
They're very aggressive going out to the farmers and the communities, and they've got thousands of salespeople. You know, their marketing force is awesome.
Yeah, that too. Never underestimate marketing.
Right, but it's convenient for farmers, just like consumers look for convenience. You know, they don't have to cook.
Yeah, and a second question. Outside of the biotech industry, who, in other words, outside of people with a vested interest, who is doing scientific controlled studies on the safety of these foods?
Well, the truth is there's not much going on. The way it works right now is there are voluntary guidelines from FDA and other government agencies involved that the industry, the Monsantos and Noventises of the world are performing. There really isn't a lot of long-term health study research that's happening right now around GE food, in part because of a lack of research dollars and the politics around that. Also, a lot of our land-grant universities are in partnership with many of these biotech companies to produce the next generation of genetically engineered crops. I mean, you have it here in California. UC Davis is a huge center for biotech. And Gray Davis, in his recent State of the Union address, said that biotech is the future for California's economic development. So...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. There's really no incentive with, as Jeannie mentioned, the policy of substantial equivalence that was really brokered, you know, with our friend Dan Quayle back in the Bush administration, the other Bush administration, which allowed the biotech companies not to have to do safety testing because the stuff is substantially equivalent. That is really the basis of why there hasn't been any research. It wasn't required.
And that began with the milk, because the milk was not different.
Right,
They strategically chose milk because they could say the milk's not any different.
Right.
I happened to testify at that hearing. I would submit that the lessons about Oregon have to do with money. The proponents for labeling spent approximately $280,000, and Monsanto and friends spent over $5 million to defeat the issue, which is more than it takes to run a congressional race in the state of Oregon. And when you're doing political ads, it seems that it's okay to tell lies. They were telling consumers that their food was going to cost up to 50% more if this was enacted. So the lesson is about money, but the other side of that lesson is the absolute power that consumers have to make a difference, because a few scrappy citizens went door to door and got those signatures for a very low cost, and that's the other side of the lesson, the people power. The same people power has been expressed and demonstrated in the dietary supplement bill that got passed in 1994, the natural products industry advocated, and also in the 280,000 comments to the USDA when they tried to trash the organic rules. I would submit that the focus of the consumers need to be twofold. One is political. We need to support the politicians that are going to require labeling. We need to support them with people power. We also need to support them with money. A little goes a long way. And the focus on the retailers to cleave them away from the GMA and the commodities sellers so that, you know, I said to the supermarket industry, you don't need to take a bullet for Monsanto on this. Don't be on the wrong side of this with your customers. And I think that that is appropriate. And so Greenpeace going after retailers, I think, can be a very effective thing. Also, we can't forget our national political strategy. Bush is on the verge of filing a complaint with the WTO regarding Europe's stand on not accepting. And I think he needs to get a lot of letters right now. I think it's a fragile time. He's feeling he's standing on soft ground with the war in Iraq and everything else, and he doesn't need another problem. And I think a focused letter writing campaign to President Bush on that single issue, I think a couple thousand letters could actually go a long way.
You know, there's one thing I'd just like to add on that, just if I may just comment on that,
please.
Just for a second. In the campaign.org, the campaign to label genetically engineered foods, there was a headline in there which was came from some major media publication, and it said the U.S. is about to go to war with the EU over its right to sell genetically modified foods. It was something like war looming over GMOs. Okay, they're talking about a trade war.
Yes,
it would be just as devastating, you know.
And Congressman Kucinich, which is from my neighborhood in Ohio, will reintroduce a bill to require labeling soon, and I believe he will be joined by Senator Boxer from California for the Senate equivalent of the bill. And in the past, these bills have not really gotten any traction, and I think it's important that they get some traction, because I think the balance in this is that, right, if the bills are considered not going anywhere, then everybody's going to stay put. But if the bills move to might go somewhere, I think there's going to be a quick rearranging of alignment. So I think it's important to support those bills. And finally, and I'll shut up, I would submit that there's a great moral outrage recently when it was reported that humans were being cloned. Every thinking person, I think, finds that abhorrent. I think it's valuable to connect human cloning with genetic engineering of food as an example. That's it.
You've seen the results of the cloned sheep. Those sheep died prematurely, riddled with arthritis and other problems, and they died very prematurely. So it's not a perfect science.